Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio talking Titans and taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Looking forward to that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. By the way, Caleb texting back in, who had the called shot about Julio Jones scoring a touchdown and actually two touchdowns, and Kevin Byard having two pick sixes. Just says, I'm not a fanboy, Joe. I'm just hoping that while Julio has been a shell of himself, that he'll play catch up and try to be himself. And if he does that, then it's completely possible that he makes two touchdowns in one game. I mean, this is Julio Jones. We just haven't seen him yet with the Titans.
Did you see my response to that?
I did not.
I responded on the text line. You can read my response if you like. Or I'll read it to you.
Yeah, you go right ahead.
I said, I'm not saying you are a fanboy. Just saying that combination of plays sounds like a fanboy fantasy. If you are right, I wash your car.
You know, you're eventually going to have to end up washing like multiple people's vehicle when everything's said and done.
I mean, I only say that when it's, you know, when I'm feeling pretty safe, but you're probably right. By the way, JC in Goodlettsville called shot on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Called shot. Vault Twitter outs the official and someone goes to his house. That's actually a pretty good shot. And
that, a little scary. Like,
if that happens, I'm not saying I'll wash your car because I will not be totally shocked.
I will say I was kind of looking around while I was in the stands last night to make sure that there were no mustard bottles that were about to get flung around. Didn't see any, though, so that's good.
Yes, yes, a lot of mustard, a lot of mustard jokes as soon as that happened on Twitter. And that'll be a thing that, you know, 10 years from now, there'll be a call and it'll screw over the balls. And we'll hear about mustard bottles. That night will live in infamy. By the way, I want to, what do you believe the crowd distribution, since we love to argue over crowd distribution, what do you believe the crowd distribution was yesterday, Tennessee versus Purdue fans?
I would say it was probably 80-20, maybe 85-15 Tennessee fans. There was a lot of Tennessee fans in there.
Yeah. I've got so many Purdue fans in my column about the game that are just screaming at me about various things, including one saying, hey, idiot, it was 50-50. I'm like,
it was not close to 50-50.
Dude, come on. I mean, even in the Purdue section that was like designated for Purdue, there's orange all through it.
Yeah. I mean, there were some Purdue fans near where I was sitting up towards the top in like section 339. And they were scattered out throughout the place, but it was nowhere close to 50-50. Not close.
Yeah. So nice try, Boilers fans. I mean, Stephanie White's mom, Becky White, Stephanie White won a national championship for Purdue, obviously, you know, former Vanderbilt coach who now is back on Big Ten Network. She, do you ever do this, sending a mean tweet to someone, but then you delete it so they can't respond?
No,
it's actually kind of brilliant. She did that twice to me yesterday. So she sent a tweet. One of them was like, you're just bitter that Purdue beat Michigan State or something like that, you know? And then another one, like stop being a loser. Cause I was like, especially like early in the game, I was like, you know, Tennessee's going to name its score, but then she deletes the tweet. So I can't respond to it.
That's very strange.
And then she joins up with a Dennis Kelly tweet about the game and says, yeah, why don't you be a professional or something? And I was like, look, Purdue did a great job. Purdue played great. Tennessee could have done a million things better to win. Purdue won. Also, the officiating was a joke. These things can all coexist.
George on Twitter says, hey, Robbie Stanley, is Bud Dupree eligible to be activated from the COVID list today? As a matter of fact, he is. So we'll see what happens on that. But now that doesn't mean that he will be. But I am interested to see from a COVID standpoint how many Titans come off the list before Sunday's game comes around. Is Julio Jones off the list? Is Bud Dupree off the list? They obviously had some good news with Taylor Lewan coming off and Nate Davis coming off yesterday as well. So things have gotten better on that front. And as you pointed out earlier in the show, no new cases yesterday as well. So keeping an eye on both of those things as we head into the weekend before the Titans take on the Dolphins.
The list as it stands in alphabetical order, not in order of player excellence. Danico Autry, Jayon Brown, Bud Dupree, Julio Jones, Kendall Lamb, Buster Skrine, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. Last on the list, first in our hearts, NWI. So a lot of key players there. And it is possible, given the new protocols. Well, I mean, look, it's possible. Anybody who's vaccinated, you test out anytime, right? So, yeah. But even with unvaxxed, I believe, given the new protocols, it's possible all of them could play Sunday.
So let's talk Tannehill for a second, because obviously he's received a lot of attention this week. We've talked about the motivation part of this game taking on the Dolphins. As we knew he would, he downplayed really anything to do with his time with the Dolphins on Wednesday, saying, you know, basically enjoyed his time there, but has moved on, focused on this team and the opportunity in front of the Titans right now. What are your expectations for Tannehill in this game, given what we saw in the second half against San Francisco with A.J. Brown on the field, going on against a defense that is very good in Miami? What are your expectations for number 17 as he takes on his former team?
Well, I think that the one big question about this week and this matchup is handling pressure. And I think so I'm going to put Todd Downing and Ryan Tannehill together on that. It just seems to me like the screen game could really be a nice weapon this week. You know, if you play a team that's known for pressuring a lot, that's an obvious counter. You know, the screen game, whether it's a, you know, traditional screen or, you know, middle screen to the tight end, receiver screens, I think there's got to be quite a bit of getting the ball out fast in this game, because the Dolphins are comfortable sending extra people, leaving themselves exposed. They have a good defense. So that's one thing. But then I just like the expectation for Tannehill. My expectations for him will vary depending on what we find out about A.J. Brown. If this is just a little minor thing and they were being careful yesterday and he's going to be largely what A.J. Brown is, then I expect Tannehill to build on last week. And I expect the Titans to make the Dolphins pay for some of their pressure. You know, obviously what you need is when they don't pressure, when they're rushing four, you need your offensive line to hold up. And if that happens, you know, I think we're going to see Xavien Howard a lot on AJ Brown. That just makes sense. And I think, you know, as a physical corner, I mean, I think that's a good matchup for the Dolphins, better than a lot of teams have, but then that's where someone else got to step up. Julio Jones, can he step up at some point and at least look like a number two receiver? That would be pretty significant for the Titans.
I mean, it would be significant. My expectations of that happening are virtually at zero at this point, because now, not only has he not done it in the game, but here we are yet again in a situation where, you know, it's COVID, so it's a different situation, but he's not on the field. Like, he's not practicing with Tannehill. And,
yeah,
you know, I understand it's the NFL and people think that, you know, practice isn't that big a deal. Practice can be a pretty big deal at times when you're never on the field practicing together. Like, you heard Todd Downing earlier in the show with the clip we played, talked about the, you know, the banked reps that Tannehill and A.J. Brown have together. Tannehill and Julio Jones really don't have that many banked reps together at this point.
Yeah, and practice is hugely important in the NFL. I mean, you're going against the best athletes in the world who are incredibly fast, and there's a whole bunch of scheming that goes into it, and precise timing is a huge part of why people succeed offensively in this league. So you don't have the contact anymore in practice, and that probably leads to some of the tackling issues we see on Sundays, but practice time is huge, and I think you saw it. It's exactly what Todd Downing was talking about. You saw those banked reps come to play in a Thursday night game on a short week with the Titans barely practicing at all. Like, he's got that connection with them. It's unrealistic to think he would have that. I think he and Julio Jones have done a lot of work together and talked a lot. And I don't think it's like their chemistry is the problem. I think it's just more Julio's lack of explosiveness. Yep. But still, you're right. It's just way less than ideal that he's not on the field this week.
ESPN The Game Nashville and Newton Motor Group have teamed up this holiday season with Souls for Souls to help children in Middle Tennessee with Souls for Music City. Souls for Souls works with our schools and community partners to deliver new shoes to kids who need them the most. And Newton Motor Group will be making a donation to Souls for Souls for every test drive at any of Newton Motor Group's four locations. You can help us achieve our goal of getting shoes to 100 kids in Nashville experiencing homelessness. For more information and to donate, visit thegamenashville.com/shoes. We'll continue to look ahead at the Titans and the Dolphins. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
One of the biggest challenges that come into play when you're going up against a left-handed quarterback like Tua, obviously defensive guys are kind of used to maybe playing against one type of quarterback when the guy's throwing from the other hand, maybe how does that change for the guys up front and then in the back end
too? It is definitely unique. I mean, up front, we always talk about matching the hand, and more times than not, it's a right-hand quarterback, and we're sticking our left hand up to try to mirror the throwing hand, where now that's totally different, right? Like, talking about sticking your right arm up, which we don't do very often, right? There's just certain situations. So, I mean, I think that's dramatic. I think just the understanding of who he is, like you go back to talking about some of these other quarterbacks and it's like keep them away from their throwing arm, right, when they're escaping. Like that's always a thing with every quarterback, and that's a little bit different, right? Obviously he's going the other way than most of these right-handed quarterbacks. So there's some little nuances to it. I don't, in terms of the back end, I mean, he's an accurate passer. Whether you're right-handed or left-handed, the ball is going to be in the spot, you know. So I don't know how much it truly affects those guys in terms of playing the ball. Back there, I do, like, when they're blitzing and rushing, it kind of correlates that way just the same as the front.
That was Shane Bowen, Titans defensive coordinator, talking about going up against Tua coming up on Sunday. And obviously, Tua, a left-handed thrower of the football. Joe Rexrode, does that have you shaking in your boots if you're a Titans defender that you're facing a lefty coming out this week?
No, but it is interesting. You have to switch up everything you're doing. So, you know, you're used to doing this. You do this now. I mean, how much is that in real time as you're getting blocked and you have to make that quick decision? I mean, is it easy? I'm sure, you know, it's a little bit of an adjustment. There aren't too many there just aren't too many good left-handed quarterbacks out there, unfortunately.
We need more. You
know, Kenny the Snake Stabler, man. You know, Jim Zorn. I mean,
Steve Young.
No, Steve Young got to be the best, right? Got to be best ever. Yeah. Although, you know, give credit to Kenny the Snake. Smoke a couple darts on the sideline, go out there, lead a touchdown drive. You know,
have the Titans ever had a left-handed quarterback? I don't think so.
None come to mind unless someone down the depth chart.
I mean, Kevin Byard threw a touchdown pass left-handed. So there's that.
That is a good point. They do have a left-handed touchdown pass in the Mike Vrabel era, which led to still probably the most improbable win of the Mike Vrabel era, his second game. but that's why, like, it'd be great to see Tua be great and turn into what a lot of people, myself included, thought he would be in the NFL, which I have not ruled out, by the way. Man, if he just cut way down on the head scratching picks. But I mean, I guess you could say, you know, it's like, golly, I mean, if that guy just didn't strike out 120 times a year, what an incredible hitter he'd be, you know?
You just find a way to put the puck in the net, you'd be a heck of a goal scorer.
Right. If he could just, if he could just stop pucks, what a goalie he would be. Well, amazing.
Caleb on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I have no confidence in the health of the Titans. It's been an issue all year long, and it's not going to magically all of a sudden be fixed. Even when Henry comes back, I'm not 100% confident in his health. He's coming back from a big injury, and there's no telling what percentage of him we're going to get. The Titans will lose and be knocked out in the wild card round. This coming from Caleb on the text line.
See, I like that. I like the pessimism and negativity. We need a little bit more of that, don't we?
By the way, we did just totally, as a texter points out, overlook Michael Vick as a left-handed quarterback. Pretty good.
Yep. He was a good one. He was a good one. Absolutely. And a left-hand, a cannon. One of the most exciting players for a few years, I think, this league has seen. Still not as good as Steve Young, but yeah, that's a big omission. Thank you. There's some others we're forgetting too, right? I mean, there's somebody we're forgetting.
Caleb, not very confident in the Titans and their health moving forward. I actually think the Titans are starting to get relatively healthy when it comes to, I mean, look, the COVID list is kind of its own thing at this point. So it's hard to predict that moving forward, but I think they're starting to get fairly healthy at the right time coming down the stretch. Obviously, we'll wait and see what happens with Derrick Henry.
Yeah, look, it's been bad, but gosh, it sure is way better now than it was a few weeks ago, right? Boomer Esiason. Let's not forget the big Boomer.
Oh, yeah. Kyle texting in says, Tim Tebow, best lefty of our lifetime. How could we forget?
How about a little Mark Brunell, who beat everybody but the Titans in 1999?
Yeah, man. I guess there are more left-handed quarterbacks than I thought.
I got a bad one for you. How about Matt Leinart?
Oh, boy.
Guy that a lot of people also thought would be great in the pros. I mean, he was can't miss. What happened to that guy?
Well, just think about the quarterbacks in that draft. You have Leinart. You got Vince Young. Jay Cutler. Like, Jay Cutler ended up being the best one by far. Wasn't even close.
Vanderbilt represent. A lot of Vanderbilt fans are really enjoying this whole Tennessee thing, by the way.
I've seen that.
That's good rivalry when you're not involved at all, but you spend a lot of your day trolling the other team. See, I like it.
Vanderbilt and Kentucky fans have that in common.
Oh, don't even. Vol fans have it too. You guys are the worst.
Why? We never bring up anybody else. It's always with us.
No, you do. Because you guys try to act like you can hang with Bama, but you can't in football. And Florida. But you lost to them too this year.
Michelle,
see, this is yet another example of Kentucky fans once again talking about Tennessee. It's like a never-ending cycle.
Listen, Michelle, I just want you to know.
What, Joe?
Like, you do not want Vol Twitter to turn on you. So just, I want you to say whatever you want to say. I'm just warning you. If you get Vol Twitter, like a bulk of Vol Twitter turned on you, you're going to want to turn off all your electronics for days.
Scary place.
Listen, I will say this. They are scary. The orangeness, they're scary. You all are really scary.
The orangeness.
The orangeness of your fan base. Like, I mean, you're all in orange and you're just really scary on Twitter and stuff. You're intense.
Between the SEC tournament here, and I've just been at many NCAA tournament sites with Kentucky and covered a lot of games involving Kentucky. The fact that you would say any other fan base is scary.
There is that.
I mean.
Listen, the year that it was the SEC basketball tournament in Nashville when Admiral Schofield, Grant Williams, that Tennessee team, I was walking around Broadway and I was wearing a Kentucky shirt, obviously. Tennessee just won. We lost, whatever. I just had someone just scream in my face. I was so scared. And yeah, but. I guess you get those crazy fans, I mean, anywhere, right?
Well, right. There was a nice young person minding their own business wearing a Tennessee sweatshirt somewhere in the city, and some nutbag BBN fan did the same thing, right? I mean, like we got to all be able to agree that every
we're all crazy
has a certain segment of scary-ass people, right?
Oh, yes.
Now, I think...
Except the Titans fans who are non-existent, according to Logan Ryan, who has done an impressive job of backpedaling since then.
Well, actually, ghosts are scary, Robbie.
Yes, that's true.
The ghost of the Titans fan who doesn't exist. But I will say that I think Tennessee and Kentucky both have a nice, juicy percentage of scary in both fan bases.
Robbie and I can agree on that. We can agree on that. They do.
John the mailman text again says, Happy New Year, everyone. Robbie, go pack, go. Joe, corned beef hash is the goat. And Michelle, good luck with these two. Thank you,
John. Hell yes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'm going to try some black eyed peas.
You better. Yes. Like, seriously. Like, have black eyed peas tomorrow. And on many days, because they're awesome. And have corned beef hash all the time. We don't talk enough about that on this show. I mean, we're the only show in town that's honest about corned beef hash and how good it is, but I don't think we talk enough about it.
Could double down on our corned beef hash talk as we move forward into 2022. Maybe our New Year's resolution as a show. Bowl season is the best season. ESPN The Game Nashville is your home for the college football bowl games and the college football playoff, brought to you by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown and Central Barbecue. Today, 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 will have both college football playoff semifinals, starting with the Goodyear Cotton Bowl with number one Alabama taking on Cincinnati at 2 o'clock. Following that game, it's number two Michigan taking on Georgia in the Capital One Orange Bowl. 312 Pizza Company is the perfect spot to catch every game during bowl season. For a list of games that we're carrying on 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, hit up our website at thegamenashville.com/bowl games. When we come back, we will catch up on the Nashville Predators. We'll be joined by our good friend Terry Crisp, Preds TV analyst. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions. Right here, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. And as we do every Friday at 8:30, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend, Terry Crisp, Predators TV analyst. Crispy, what's going on? Happy New Year to you and the family.
Thank you, guys, very much. I appreciate that. And listen, a happy birthday to Rex. Just to remind him that it is his birthday, and an old proverb once told me, way back when, Rex, what's the sense of a birthday if you can't have any fun? So, hey, big fella, enjoy your birthday.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that.
Very good stuff. Happy birthday to the great Joe Rexroad. Crispy, obviously good to see the Predators back on the ice, first of all. You know, obviously they want the wins to come along with that as they move forward here. But overall, what have you thought of the way that they've played the game in their two games since coming back from the break?
You know what? Overall, I was happy. Everybody like every other team can bang off the layoff. We have rust on us, and we got some points we have to clear up and whatnot. But starting with our goaltending, we got solid goaltending by both goalies, Saros and Riddick. So that I was happy to see. They were right back on beam. The first game, the effort I like. Sometimes I used to use that one, the harder we work, the behinder we get. And that was sort of like our team in a couple of these games that late in the game, when we had things coming back, getting them into it, I just think in the third period, we've got to become the team that gets tougher, faster, stronger. And last night's game was a pretty good evidence of that, that we didn't kick it into gear when we came back and had a lead. We came back, tied it, went with it. But overall, yeah, and like I said, the guys have got to get back into gear and get to know each other again.
If you were in this situation, Crispy, because we talked about going into yesterday, and actually Todd Richards said, you know, they talked about it, they weren't sure, but if you were in a situation where you had this long break, you had a back-to-back, would you have considered going with Saros both games?
You know what? I probably would have considered, because I'm an old-style coach that when the horse is hot, you ride him. And he played well, hard. But Riddick has played also, and we certainly can't put that loss on Riddick. I mean, in the third period, he saved our guy's bacon. I mean, we were so lax in the third period, and we've seen that before. I mean, our turnovers were ridiculous. I mean, unforced turnovers in our end. I could probably go back over the video and take four times where we had the puck. Nobody bothered us. We threw it right into the slot, right on their stick. Perfect pass. Riddick saved them all four times on it. So in that result, no, I think the coaches made a good decision in playing Riddick, not a problem. I just think the guys out in front of him have to get a little smarter. And the one that I'm going to show and repeat is that one goal, the Laine's goal. That was, to me, the epitome of not being aware of what's going on, not knowing what the heck you're doing out there. Five guys surrounded Laine. Five guys. And he somehow got the puck. Nobody looked over their heads. Nobody had their head in a swivel. Laine passed it across, went on through five guys. They threw it back. You're going to blame Riddick for that goal? I don't think so. So in my estimation, in my notes that I took last night in front of the TV, is the fact that too many Lone Rangers, too many unforced giveaways, right point blank on their stick. The other one I had was late in the game. They had one that our guys had it in our zone. So that's the area we better clean up. We better get a little tougher, a little smarter with the puck in our zone.
Yep, I don't think there's any question about that, Crispy. And obviously not having Roman Josi the last couple of games does not help in that regard. I'm just curious for your perspective, how much does the game change both defensively but even offensively as well when you don't have Roman Josi in there carrying the puck? Like how much does that change the way the Predators have to attack things in your mind?
Yeah, you know what? It changes huge only from the fact that when you have Josi there, you know you've got that weapon. He's there. He's back to defend. He leads the rush. He comes down off the point. When he's got the puck, things happen. But that doesn't give the rest of the defense corps a day off or a license not to play their game or to play up to their abilities. So, okay, we can moan. Every team has guns out. Every team has COVID guys and whatnot. So, okay. But to my estimation, when Josi's out, you think guys would work harder and know they have to fill in that one spot or get their game in. That's what I want to see from the present-day defense without our captain, that they step up to the breach and start to get their heads on a swivel and quit having a happy stick and waving at the guy coming down at them and take the body instead of fishing for the puck.
Sticking on with that group, Crispy, we've talked a fair amount, you know, here and there, and certainly last year into the offseason, early this season, about Dante Fabbro. What do you think about him at this point of this very critical season for him?
You know what? I think Dante is one of those young players that he goes sort of in and out of streaks, that he seems to really connect and play like three or four solid games, and he sort of slides away from it. And I think the coaches understand that being youngsters, and that's the hardest. No, there's only two positions that are tough when you come in as a youngster. If you come in as a new young goalie, that's tough. And the second one is a young defenseman. And I still consider Fabbro young in terms of experience and whatnot. But I also like that when he's playing his game, he's confident. But I think, and I've said this before, I love watching him play, but he's got to learn this. As Tolvin has to learn it, and all the other youngsters come in, that you're in a different league. This whole league steps up 10%, 20%, 50% faster than what you ever played. And when you have the puck or you're making plays, you only have a split second. If you're lucky, you might have a second and a half to make up your mind whether you're going to skate, pass, or shoot it. And I think right now, Fabbro goes into those situations when he has the puck or going back to get it or going to make a play with it and waits that extra second or extra 2 seconds, and then he's into a bit of a jam on that one. So once he realizes that he has to make his plays a little quicker, a little faster, he'll be fine.
Terry Crisp on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Crispy joins us every Friday morning at 8:30. Crispy, do you think the Predators should send maybe, like, I don't know, an email or a memo out to the rest of the league and just say, hey, you probably need to stop trying to fight Tanner Janot? Like, should that be something that people should just steer clear from at this point?
Yeah. I used to say, when you go after certain guys, what do you want to commit suicide? What are you thinking about out there? But the nice part is that Janot doesn't, you know, he's one of those guys that doesn't go looking for it, but he's there to step in, and Borowiecki and Olivier, and Trent. And even watch Benning. Like, Benning thinks he's 6'8 and 220 pounds and fights like Hal Gill. Well, maybe not like Hal Gill. We'll give Gill a pass on that one. But he's all right. Hal won't be listening anyway, so I'm safe till he gets a hold of me. But Benning, he plays hard like that. So, you know, I just love it, and I always watch when he's out there. Other teams, when there's a melee or when there's a scrum and he suddenly slides into it, like there's certain guys in other teams that when they slide into it, everything seems to calm down. Nobody seems to want to drop the gloves now. Okay, this is enough. We'll all just go back to our benches. And Janot is one of those guys. Borowiecki is now becoming one when he slides into those scrums and they're all looking at him. Not too many guys want to keep the scrum going.
How would Tanner Janot fare against the Broad Street Bullies?
He would play well with us. You're going to put him against the worst guy. you thought we're going to play against him, didn't you? No, no, no. He's playing for us. Nice trick, guy. Nice try.
Oh, I love it. Crispy, great stuff as always, my friend. We appreciate so much you taking time to join us, not only today, but throughout the season so far as well. Looking forward to more of it coming up in 2022.
Thanks, guys. And I'm going to take just a quick opportunity to thank you guys and all of our fans and all the people out there. Please, everybody have a happy new year. Have a safe one, please. It's a new year, but don't do anything foolish out there. And in the new year of 2022, let's all be safe, sound, and healthy, and look after ourselves and our families, guys. God bless y'all.
That's right. Absolutely. Well said. You as well, Terry Crisp. Our guest here Crispy. On Robbie and Rex. So Crispy, the best in the business, joins us every Friday morning at 8:30. I will say, people probably need to stop trying to fight Tanner Janot. It's not ending very well for those that try it. It was that almost got dangerous last night with that right cross that he threw at the end of that. It was he's quite the fighter, that Tanner Janot.
Yeah, I mean, between him and Borowiecki, man, all of a sudden this is a team you don't want to tangle with, which, again, is still every once in a while you're like, wait, how did this happen so fast? But that's the thing. You have a guy or two who can do that stuff, and it's like you can sort of change just the entire feeling around your team when people want to take a run at, some of your stars.
Preds back in action coming up tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena at 1 o'clock is the puck drop time tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. So a little matinee hockey taking on the Chicago Blackhawks tomorrow. When we come back, we'll take more of your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Titans, the Preds, college football playoff, everything is on the table. We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
Got run over by
wow. Walking home from our house Christmas Eve. Oh yeah, it's a little Rex Road got run over by a reindeer, bringing us back in here today on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. As I'm sure as I'm speaking, Michelle Knezovic giggling around in the control room, unable to speak.
You're
everything
right.
Happening right now.
It just has such a nice little ring to it.
I don't know.
Michelle's favorite creation of all time.
I don't know why, like, doing that twice in a row makes it so much funnier, but it just does. Just Robbie going, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Again. You know, like, it just, it's well done. That's a crack producer right there, you know.
Thank you, guys.
Feel for doubling up something and making it even funnier.
I appreciate
just
it.
Just really highlighting my contributions that I bring to the show on a daily basis of the, wow. That's how about that?
Join Robbie and Rex. Oh yeah, really? You think so?
How about that right there?
I agree.
Yes. It is Free Beer Friday, served up by Joyland in East Nashville. Text in the keyword joy to the game line right now at 615-737-1025 and be qualified to win a Joy Beer and Joyland's new Smash Burger Deluxe. Once again, that's Joy to 615-737-1025. We are taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Logan texting in says, Ben Harper should have gotten an assist on the Columbus's goal in the third period. I wanted to smash my TV again. He should just slap it down the ice every single time he touches it. Was a quite the turnover by Ben Harper last night that led to the third goal for Columbus.
I sent, you know, Crispy got a little fired up last segment.
He was.
You know, you ask a coach about a goalie decision and you know, a lot of the things that happen aren't really on the goalie. You get a little bit of fire going there. Yeah, you just, you know, that's the thing. It's like there's rust and there's back-to-back and all these things, but just mental errors, you know, those are so discouraging. And in this game, one really badly placed one of those can really be costly, as we've seen.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Our buddy Will from Nashville texting in says, I hadn't seen that Purdue team until the Tennessee game yesterday. They're pretty impressive, especially offensively. I'm surprised they lost four games in the Big Ten. Are y'all? And without several of their best players to add.
Well, that's fair. I mean, they're legit. I mean, Jeff Brohm's a good coach. They have a good offense. Aiden O'Connell's a former walk-on who, you know, is just is a revelation. And, yeah, look, I mean, they took it to Michigan State when Michigan State was ranked, number two or whatever. They beat they went to Iowa and thumped them on the road. And I don't even honestly remember all of their losses at this point. But I think, you know, defensively you can see where, although Tennessee's offense is good enough to make a lot of defenses look bad, that's where Purdue was subpar. But yeah, offensively, think about that offense yesterday and then put their best two receivers in that offense and think about what it is. And the thing is, they didn't run the ball a year. I think one of the big keys yesterday is they got some running game going that kind of helped them in the middle of the game possess the ball a little bit and kind of flip the game around.
I'm seeing on Twitter, Ryan Porth very fired up about the Cincinnati Bearcats taking on Alabama tonight. College football playoff coming up later today. Alabama taking on Cincinnati. Georgia taking on Michigan later tonight. We talked a little bit earlier. For Cincinnati to hang around in this game, what has to go right for them? What's the key to the game for Cincinnati to make this an actual game in the fourth quarter against Alabama? An Alabama team who the last time we saw looked like they were pretty unstoppable on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the only way that this is a good game and is a fourth quarter game with Cincinnati having a chance to steal it is just the absolute peak performance by Cincinnati's offense. I believe Cincinnati's offense is good enough to move the ball on Alabama, good enough to score touchdowns on Alabama. You have to score the touchdowns. You have to finish in the red zone. I think Cincinnati is going to get to the red zone. I think Cincinnati is going to move the ball between the 20s. If you watch Alabama's defense all year, they got some great players. Will Anderson is a great player. There are weak spots. There are vulnerabilities in the secondary. It isn't the interior dominant defense that we've seen. Even in some of Bama's recent defenses that haven't been that good, they've usually had at least a guy or two in there who really is a problem. Again, they have great players in every position, but it's a defense Cincinnati can move the ball on. I don't have a lot of confidence in Cincinnati's defense in this game. But Mechie being out is a huge loss for Alabama in this game and potentially in the national title game.
Huge loss for Alabama, no question about it. And then we'll see Georgia and Michigan coming up tonight. First off, I think a lot of people expecting a low-scoring game in this one with the two defenses that are going to be trotted out there. I think Georgia, look, and I think a lot's been made the last couple of weeks of, well, maybe this Georgia team's not as good as we thought they were all season long. I don't necessarily buy into that. I think they're still a pretty darn good football team, and I expect a statement to some degree tonight between Georgia and Michigan. I think Georgia's going to play really well. I think they're going to hammer Michigan in this game.
There's a lot of, and we talked about it at the time, kind of revisionist history on Georgia after what Alabama did to them in Atlanta about really who did they beat, who did they play. Look.
They did beat the Cheez-It Bowl champion Clemson, by the way, so there is that.
Well, listen, Tennessee went into Alabama and that offense was doing just fine. And that for a lot of that game, and that was a one-score game late in the third quarter. Tennessee's offense, did what it wanted to do most weeks, including against Pitt in the shootout. Georgia came into Knoxville and just locked it down after the first two drives, which to me is one of the most impressive things they've done. They went into Auburn when Auburn was playing well, beat them 34-10 on the road. That's a legit team that I have already called the shot is going to win the national championship. So I think today, the Georgia performance probably is going to shut people up who want to say they didn't do anything this year. That don't be fooled. It's true that their schedule, like they didn't end up, with wins over a lot of highly ranked teams. They still played a good schedule and they dominated some good teams on that schedule. But we'll see.
So if they lose this game, what do you think the talking point on Kirby Smart looks like in Athens? Because Look, he's not in danger like losing his job or anything, but there are some Georgia fans already who have thought to themselves, gosh, he can never win the big game. He can never get past Saban. He can never do all this stuff. What do you think the talking point is on Kirby Smart today if they lose to Michigan?
Oh, it won't be good. It won't be good at all. And I think if they lose this game, if they win this game, they go lose to Alabama, it's still going to be very heavily, but it's that's the Death Star, man.
Can't beat the greatest coach of all time.
Yeah, there's still, I think, a little bit of I think what the talking point will be if they win today and then they lose a good game to Alabama is you can't win a national championship in this sport with a Stetson Bennett as your quarterback. You have to have, I don't know, a Justin Fields as your quarterback. You need to make good quarterback decisions too, because as time goes on, the more and more I think about it, boy, if he would have lived with mistakes from Justin Fields rather than go with safe Jake Fromm back in the day, would he already have a natty right now? He might.
Maybe.
So I think that's – I think they're going to win it with Stetson Bennett, for the record. I do. I think they've got enough around him. But that's going to be the criticism. And you know, I think that's fair if that's how it turns out. But if they lose today, oh, yeah, people are going to be down on Kirby big time.
Well, I mean, the last two games that you would have seen at that point would be just getting throttled by Alabama, and then whatever happens in the Michigan game if they were to lose that game today. Be an interesting time to be Kirby Smart again. Like, his job's not going to be in jeopardy or anything like that, but that fan base gets loud when you don't start winning some of these big games, and they're already kind of there with Kirby Smart anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on him. And by the way, if it turns out that way, do we go all the way back full circle to Jim Harbaugh's a genius? We may be doing that, right? For the record, on the texter who asked about Purdue, they lost 27-13 at Notre Dame. They lost at home to Minnesota and got rocked at home by Wisconsin, and they lost 59-31 at Ohio State, which, you know, they scored plenty of points. But you can imagine if you saw Purdue's defense yesterday, what Ohio State would have done to them and did do to them.
Yes. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. You can check out this great deal. Get a Downtown Dollars $150 digital gift card for only $100. The gift card is redeemable at hundreds of downtown Nashville shops, restaurants, and more. And with Downtown Dollars, you get more to spend at an old favorite or discover one of the many new destinations in downtown's growing neighborhoods. Also, it's the end of the year blowout. Save 75% off at Bad Axe Throwing Nashville, Nashville Armory, and the Beanbag Coffee and Tea Shop. You can check out other great deals like the Woodhouse Spa, Brooklyn Bowl, Seafood Sensation, and more. All of those are at thegamenashville.com/deals. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend David Ubben from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Music City Bowl yesterday and look ahead to the college football playoff as well. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.